Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And you heard the Bridgegate verdicts on Friday. Bill Baroni and Bridget Ann Kelly, both guilty on all counts. So what happens now? With us are two-thirds of our Bridgegate reporting team, New Jersey Public Radio reporter Matt Katz and Andrea Bernstein, the senior editor for politics and policy for WNYC News. I consider Nancy Solomon, who's the managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, part of your triumvirate, even though you guys were in the courtroom. Hi, Andrea. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
So let's play a little bit more of that Chris Christie interview with Charlie Rose on CBS this morning. Christie denying again, despite all the testimony in court, that he had any knowledge of Bridgegate.
I've had 25 people serve on my senior staff over 7 years, and I had one person who didn't get it. One out of 25. So I don't think it says anything about me. I think it says everything about that person.
Why do you think she did it?
Wish I knew, Charlie. I wish I knew. I never could figure it out. It was one of the most abjectly stupid things I've ever seen. I mean, think about it. You know me. I'm pretty good at this political game. I'm up by 25 points in a re-election in a blue state. And they decide they're going to create a traffic jam in a town that's a Democrat town that I wound up winning 2 months later in the election.
So it was stupid on the face.
Absolutely stupid
on
the face.
And criminal.
As determined by the jury.
Whoa. So first of all, I'm kind of taken aback, Andrea, by Charlie Rose's question there about Bridget Ann Kelly. So why do you think she did it? And Christie's answer, I wish I knew, Charlie, I wish I knew, as if she was the mastermind.
It's so painful for me to have listened to that interview coming on the heels of the trials, on the trial, on a lot of levels. And let's just unpack it. So the jury obviously did not believe Bridget Kelly's testimony. They did not believe Bill Baroni's testimony. But some of the jurors have spoken out. And of those, they have said Chris Christie was the puppeteer. He was responsible for everything. One of the jurors said, why wasn't Christie on trial? So their view, having heard all the evidence, is that Bridget Kelly was guilty, but that so was Chris Christie. And there was voluminous testimony during the trial, not only from the two defendants, Bridget Kelly and Bill Baroni and David Wildstein, who, by the way, the prosecution on Friday said, yeah, we believe everything he said, including that he told Chris Christie and that Chris Christie laughed about it, that the mayor of Fort Lee wasn't getting his phone calls returned, but that there was testimony, documentary evidence that Christie's campaign manager, Bill Stepien, who is now working for Donald Trump as his national field director, working today to get out the vote, that he knew all about the retribution, that he was even discussing a cover story before this, and that what Bridget Ann Kelly's lawyer said is she was the scapegoat. She was made to take the fall. She was called a human pinata. And after all the testimony that we heard, it was distressing that a national television broadcaster allowed Christie to say that again unchallenged with all the new evidence that we heard at trial.
And Matt, ultimately, there was not a unified story about Bridgegate among the three people who've now either pleaded guilty, Wildstein, or been convicted, Baroni and Bridget Ann Kelly. Most notably, perhaps, Wildstein did say that Christie knew about the plot and that it was political retribution for the mayor of Fort Lee not endorsing Christie for re-election. But Bridget Ann Kelly's testimony was that she told Christie, but she told Christie what she believed, which was that it was a legitimate traffic study, and that's what he must have thought as it was going on. Is that discrepancy important after the fact?
It's somewhat important. She actually, though, Kelly also said that she told the governor during the lane closures that the mayor of Fort Lee had called the governor's office to complain and had also said he thought the incident was punitive. So the governor was getting hints that there was something untoward going on from the get-go, according to this testimony. And, you know, the three of them did basically say the same thing, that the governor knew before and then during. There were so many falsehoods that Charlie Rose unfortunately allowed Christie to get away with. It was really mind-boggling. The reporters who were in the courtroom were losing their collective minds on Twitter watching this interview this morning. The one other point I'd make, he says, I had 20, in the clip he played, I've had 25 people serve on my senior staff. Bridget Kelly's the only one who didn't get it. I assume that means she didn't get it, that you have to be ethical. It's an arbitrary pool he's talking about, his senior staff. He's had four high-level people in his inner circle who have been now convicted of federal crimes. It's not just Bridget Kelly. It's also David Wildstein, who pleaded guilty. It's also Bill Baroni, who is his top staffer at the Port Authority. And it's also his best friend, David Sampson, who was the chairman of his transition team, who had a huge amount of sway in the administration, who is being sentenced in a few weeks for trying to bribe United Airlines in his role as the chairman of the Port Authority. So, you know, what Christie has repeatedly done throughout his political career when he's in a little bit of hot water is to go around the New Jersey press corps that actually knows the nuance of what's happening, use a national television interviewer who does not, you know, follow all the intricacies and also benefits from the soundbite short clips of television, and is able to and tries to work, you know, squirm his way out of it. I don't know if it'll work this time. It has worked many times in the past, but it was really unfortunate that even the basic fact checking couldn't be done. I just started making a list. I have six things he said this morning that were just either totally false or misleading. Hmm.
Andrew, you mentioned what some of the jurors said after the verdict. Anything else interesting from that? What have jurors been saying?
Yeah, I mean, the most striking thing is, and they gave some brief interviews with the Star Ledger, with Bloomberg News, and with The Record. And so the most striking thing to me was that in the brief interviews, what they wanted to talk about was Chris Christie. The thing on Bridget Kelly that seemed to be the toughest for her is not the email that we all know about, which is time for some traffic problems in Fort Lee, but a text message that she sent on the day of the lane closures, or saying, is it wrong that I am smiling, when she learned that school children were stuck in traffic. And her explanation for that was that she was smiling because David Wildstein had told her that he was going to fix the commutes on the George Washington Bridge, and there was going to be a big bipartisan press conference with Christie and Cuomo. And the jury just rejected that. They also rejected Bill Baroni's testimony. I mean, one of the problems for Bill Baroni is that he was a public figure. He was a politician. He was the person who was sent out to be the front person for the Christie administration when they were in trouble. So there was a lot of tape, including some very damaging tape where he testified before the New Jersey legislature while this was sort of the scandal was trying to come out, and he was trying to tamp it down by saying that it was a fairness issue. And one of the legislators said in response to him at that time, nobody in this room believes that. I think the jury made pretty clear that they had that reaction too to Bill Baroni, that they didn't believe that. And having said that, you know, the jury doesn't get to say, okay, Bill Baroni and Bridget Kelly were 10% responsible for this. Chris Christie was 90%, or, you know, Chris Christie and some of his other top people, including his campaign manager, who had some very, very dark emails that were admitted at trial. But the jury was very explicitly instructed, don't think about who's not in this courtroom, only think about who's here. And they said, we had no choice but to convict. One of the jurors told, I'm pretty sure it was The Record, that it initially was 8-4 for conviction, 8-4 conviction, 4 for acquittal, and that it was emotionally tense, and that one of the very difficult things for them, you know, you think about Chris Christie today saying that Bridget Kelly was stupid. Here's somebody who faces many years in jail, who's a single mom who has four teenagers. And even the prosecutor said, I take no pleasure in this verdict. So it does seem like Chris Christie is continuing to behave the way that they said he was behaving towards her when she worked for him.
Rena in Hoboken, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rena.
Hi. I'm curious if Matt can answer. There was emails on Chris Christie's phone, and this phone disappeared. And they did want them admitted originally, and it was denied by the judge. So what happened to his emails? They make such a big stink about Hillary's emails. What exactly happened to his emails, and why were they not admitted?
It's a great question, and it is fascinating because if you imagine that if Christie was the vice presidential nominee, this would be a huge issue. Christie had an email account that came from Chris and Mary Pat Christie, from him and his wife. It was a joint email account. That was the way it came across. I knew about this email account because when Christie would be upset with me about a story, this is the email he would use. This was the email he used for work. He didn't use his chris.christie@nj.gov or whatever the official account was. But when it came time for his emails to be subpoenaed, that personal account was not turned over. His work account was turned over, which is unfortunate because we know that he was doing work on his personal account. In addition, he had a cell phone, which he gave to his personal attorney, which was likewise never turned over to the feds. This New Jersey taxpayers, including the caller, paid $11.3 million so far for Christie's attorneys in the case. About $3 million of that was subcontracted out to a digital forensics firm that was in charge of compiling any information in the governor's office that would be applicable to the Fed's subpoena regarding Bridgegate. Amazingly enough, not a single document, email, or text from Chris Christie himself was turned over, was relevant to the case, except for one, which was Christie, somewhat ironically in hindsight, boosting the resignation statement for David Wildstein and making it more positive toward David Wildstein. Mm. Other than that, there is no correspondence, and that is quite confounding because we know that there was so much correspondence going on within his inner circle about this blossoming scandal. And Chris Christie was not talking about it electronically. Perhaps he was only having verbal conversations, or perhaps if you believe him, he didn't know anything about it and wasn't talking about it at all. Of course, that is contradicted by even his own allies in their testimony during the trial.
I also want to say that there was quite a lot of documentary evidence. I mean, Christie said, I think in that clip, Brian, if not in that clip, he said in that interview, you know, the jury agreed with everything that I said when this happened, which was that essentially it was three rogue people. But there was a great deal
of
testimony.
Is this the clip? Let me play another 10-second Christie clip. Tell me if this is what you're talking about.
In the whole trial, no one, not even Bridget Kelly, Bill Baroni, or David Wildstein, ever testified that anyone ever said to me that this was an act of political retribution.
Okay, so that's just a flat-out lie. David Wildstein testified that it was exactly that. And let's not forget that. So David Wildstein, who the prosecution stands behind, said Christie called him Mr. Wolf after the character in Pulp Fiction who would go in and clean up the bodies after people had been killed. And David Wildstein testified exactly that they were discussing it at the World Trade Center on the 12th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and that Christie laughed when he heard Mayor Mark Sokolich wasn't getting his phone calls. Bridget Kelly testified that Mayor Mark Sokolich had called her office and that she had discussed retaliation with Chris Christie while they were going on. Her testimony is that Christie knew about the retaliation and she didn't. In addition to this, I mean, I think it's very important to put this in the context of the office because there was testimony about retaliation against the mayor of Jersey City in which meetings were canceled and that Christie was personally involved in that he personally ordered the icing out of Steve Fulop. Now, they couldn't charge this because of what resources are you misusing if you cancel a meeting with Steve Fulop, but there was multiple witnesses and documentary evidence that Christie himself was ordering that retaliation and all kinds of other retaliation against political foes.
Bob in Marstown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
My question and real concern is that Paul Fishman had all this information to prosecute Bridget Kelly. I know how these things work. What prosecutors do is they take an underling like that, flip them, present them to the grand jury and go after the big fish.
Yeah,
in essence, Paul Fishman got two non-entities and let Christie off the hook.
And Bob, I'm going to cut you off just because we're going to run out of time. But, Matt, why didn't the U.S. attorney, Paul Fishman, flip, as Bob puts it, Bridget Ann Kelly and maybe Baroni, too, and get Christie in that way?
With the two people who were charged in this, they had not only testimony from the state's witness, David Wildstein, who did flip, but they also had documents. With Christie, there were no emails. There were no texts with his name on it. And, I mean, what we suppose is that if you're going to shoot for the king, you best not miss. And the idea of going after Christie with underlings just alleging what they said was said to him at the time with no documents to back it up just wasn't enough to charge him.
We are just about out of time. But, Andrea, since you're covering the presidential race, too, I just want you to talk for a second, like you were telling me before off the air, about how New Yorkers and how many New Yorkers are playing a central role in the home stretch of this campaign. Obviously, we say both of these candidates for president are New Yorkers, but we also have others, including the New York office of the FBI, which is,
right,
you know, the capital of so-called Trump land within the FBI that possibly pressured Comey to send that letter 10 days ago that may have changed the race.
Right. And Rudy Giuliani told MSNBC late last week, Rudy Giuliani, of course, our former mayor, that he had gotten information from active FBI agents about what was going on in this case. So there's, of course, Rudy Giuliani, who's been a chief Trump surrogate. There's Bernard Kerik, the convicted felon, former New York City police officer who is casting doubt.
Commissioner. Yeah.
Police commissioner, who's casting doubt on the email investigation. Somebody tweeted at him yesterday, "Hey, Bernie, while you were in jail, they invented this thing called the computer." Rudy Giuliani is now, according to some reporting by by NBC reporters Katie Turr and Benji Sarlin, on the list to be attorney general. And of course, interestingly enough, I mean, Matt and I were talking over the weekend about how the final weekend of the 2016 campaign was not supposed to end this way for Chris Christie, who in 2014 was in 19 states before the election. Matt was with him in some of them. He was in no states this weekend and had to stay home in Mendham. And the Trump campaign had to face a number of questions about why they were keeping him as transition chair, given these convictions now bringing to a total four top aides who have been convicted of felonies.
I guess we'll see if Trump wins the election, whether Christie remains transition chair and actually runs the transition.
But that will be interesting. And we can all think about U.S. Attorney, Attorney General Rudy Giuliani.
But according to Nate Silver, who was on the show earlier, there's only a 35% chance of Trump winning the election. And according to the Times, the Times Upshot site, which does the same kind of projection, there's only about an 18% chance that Trump will be elected president. So we may never find out whether Chris Christie gets to maintain that position or not. All right. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Matt Katz, thanks for all your work covering the Bridgegate trial, and thanks for coming back on
this morning.
And, Andrea, I'll see you tomorrow night because you will be with me at 7 o'clock as we kick off our election coverage together.
From Hillary Clinton headquarters, which is quite the thing that we have two candidates with their headquarters right here in Manhattan, just a few miles from us.
And
think about that.
You'll be stationed at Clinton headquarters. And just a reminder, folks, our election coverage does begin 7 o'clock tomorrow night. I'll anchor the first 2 hours, then NPR will take it from Washington after that. So tune in for election coverage right here on WNYC. And coming up next, we are going to talk to reporters who are gathering right now on the phone from the three biggest swing states, Florida, North Carolina, and Ohio. They'll all talk together to see what's happening. Stay with us.